Okay, I am not Dr. Lipsky. He had a conflict. He couldn't be a moderator and a speaker at the same time for some reason. I don't know why, but so he asked me to fill in for him. My name is Mark Jensen. I'm a contractor for the CDC. I've been at the CDC for about 5 years working on various initiatives, primarily always around Finn. I happen to be involved a little bit at the tail end of the development of the HL7 message guide. I reviewed a few of the initial drafts before the final draft went out. So I'll talk about the development of the HL7 message guide for syndromic surveillance. Dr. Lipsky, this presentation was put together by Dr. Lipsky, Mary Hamilton, Adam Browning, Ted Klein, Ruchi Sharma, and they were primary in development of the actual guide itself. A little bit of background, I'm sure you all know by now, you've heard it many times about the HITECH Act, meaningful use regulations. There was one of the requirements, one of the certification criteria out there around syndromic surveillance, and that's syndromic surveillance messages sent back to public health, and that was an objective as part of the meaningful use. The International Society of Disease Surveillance and CDC Public Health Surveillance Program Office took the leadership role in developing some provisional recommendation and core business processes for that. What this presentation is just an outline of the activities and the technical approach taken by the CDC's Public Health Informatics and Technology Program Office to develop the Finn message guide for syndromic surveillance. This just outlines kind of the major events that took place. Back in January of 2010, the interim final rule around meaningful use was introduced. As part of that, they recognized that the specification that was included in there wasn't sufficient or wasn't basically sufficient to handle syndromic data exchange. And in February or March, activities went started by the ISDS to look at what type of syndromic surveillance the standard should be, the data elements and things like that. In July, the final rule was actually issued, and what they did, They took out the syndromic surveillance standard, but left in the objective because that specification and the standard wasn't sufficient. And in September, ISDS went through a collaborative effort and started initiating a conversation with many partners as far as identifying the business processes, business cases, to help support the exchange of syndromic surveillance data from the EHRs into public health. They issued several documents in that process. There was a provisional document, I think, in maybe July, then a preliminary document, a provisional document, and then the final document, which was issued in January of 2011. In parallel with some of that later activity, the CDC undertook the effort to actually take that initial work that they had done and start working on the surveillance guide so that it could be out the door as soon as possible because they knew where they were behind trying to get the specification out. The current status of it, the actual draft guide went out, is posted on the Federal Register, and it went out on May 26, 2011. Two documents actually went out, the Finn messaging guide for syndromic surveillance and then a question and answer document were also published. We asked for comments back on those guides, and they were due back in June 20th of 2011, and CDC is in the process of going through, taking that feedback, and making the modifications to that final version. Some of the methods that were used, the work done by ISDS helped constrain the development of the message guide. It really identified what the scope of that data exchange should be, what are the data sources involved. It outlined the surveillance goals for syndromic surveillance, did a lot of work around identifying the data elements and certainly the core data elements for syndromic surveillance, and it also the message and vocabulary standards that were going to be used within that specification. And the specification basically contains the formats and the data for emergency department and urgent care patient visits captured by health information systems and then sent into public health. So it doesn't include all data sources. They really constrained it to the ED and the UC patient visits. The specifications that were chosen were the 231 and 251 HL7 standards. This lays out the business approach that was taken for development of the message guide. Obviously, the development wanted to support all the business objectives that ISDS had laid out, supporting syndromic surveillance goals, and identifying and support the ISDS-defined data elements. Obviously, harmonization with the national efforts, support continuous improvement, because they knew that the core set of data elements and other process might evolve this document over time, and it's certainly their work. Wanted to harmonize with the work that was already underway with Finn. Finn had an SNI framework that they're starting to work that kind of mirrors ONC's effort. And the extensibility, because they knew that there would be additional data elements that they'd already identified as part of their work but weren't included as a core. But they also knew that some locals and state may have some own data elements that they want to include within their jurisdiction. And they're also looking at the development of a certification around that criteria to support the development of that public health surveillance data exchange. These are the business objectives that were outlined by ISDS, ongoing timely intelligence and data on public health threats, support the early identification or ruling out of public health threats, characterizing populations at greatest risk, really assessing the severity and magnitude of threats, the continued evaluation and deployment of new and improved surveillance practice, because they knew this wasn't going to be the final version. It was going to be a continuous improvement process. Also keep the stakeholders and public health leadership and the public informed about conditions, and also support the collaborative effort by health providers, media, and first responders, and government decision makers. These are really the five key steps that supported that business approach. As again, I pointed out, ISDS really scoped the data sources that were going to be included in this version. It was really focused around emergency departments and urgent care. They actually selected the HL7 specification, the 2.5 and 2.3.1 message. The ADT message was selected. That's the admit, discharge, and transfer message from HL7. ISDS did recommend core data elements, and they were actually 32, not the 29 that were cited in this slide. I think the provisional work had the 29. And also, the work they did helped provide the vocabulary that was going to be used within the message. The harmonization with the national efforts, they wanted to look at cross-domain interoperability. So the standards that were developed for public health domain within syndromic surveillance, how do they map against the other domains, laboratory reporting? Excuse me. Certainly there was a lot of collaboration in the development of that ISDS undertook to work on all the syndromic surveillance use cases and the data elements. Look at the tools and testing. There were some existing tools that were out there for message validation, so how could those tools be used for the syndromic surveillance messaging and incorporate some of the integrated with the healthcare enterprise connectathon. Also, the work was to provide the technical assistance around helping the state and territories actually work on implementing that standard-based data exchange for syndromic surveillance. This is a diagram of, if you look, part of the diagram is really a mirror of what ONC is doing within their SNI framework. It talks about the use case development, the harmonization of the core concept, implementation specifications, reference implementations, and then certification testing. What we did in this was I actually add the other steps, the actually going into production and getting the business value out of that work. We also added the FIN governance because that's some work that the CDC is undertaking to develop that governance structure to help lead some of the decisions that go through that SNI framework. But this work really involved the development of the use case, which is documented in the ISDS document, the harmonization efforts that they undertook to identify the core elements, and then the actual implementation specifications. That's really the document that we're looking that was developed as part of this effort. The technical approach that the group developing the message document went through, they wanted to look at the best message for structure or structure to capture that emergency department and urgent care patient visit data elements. Look at the approach because they wanted to support both versions within that. So how could they do a 251 and compatible 231 messages? Look at the technical approach for including or making the guide extensible or the messages extensible by the state and local authorities. Development of the use case model, and also looking at the message structure for sending syndromic surveillance and the need to actually incorporate acknowledgement messages back on some of the business cases, some of the use cases within that. And also then go into the detailed work of all the segment attributes for the fields. As I said before, the message type that was chosen was the ADT, the admit, discharge, and transfer message. It was felt this one was the most widely used within that healthcare setting. There are actually 51 different types, but this guide focused on just three or just four because of the scope of the data that was going to be passed. It's really looking at the patient admit, the AO1 message, the AO3, the patient discharge, the AO4, the patient registration and outpatient setting, and then the AO8 to actually do the patient information updates. So if you look in the guide, those are the four message types that you'll see within the specification. This is a diagram that I think ISDS, I know ISDS used it anyway. It talks about the public health syndromic surveillance model, and it has all the potential data sources or a number of the potential data sources around the outside. And if you look at the one that's highlighted there, it just talks about that emergency and urgent care data transferred. So that's really the scope of what this document was intended for. If you look at the guide, what it does have is it has all the message structures in it. And if you look, the AO1 and the AO4 and the AO8 all have the same message structure. So if you look in the specifications, you'll see that in one table, one section of that document. The patient discharge message is a little bit different, has a little different message structure, so it's in another segment, but they're very similar. And this again, you'll see the AO4 and AO8 messages. And the AO4 is the patient register, usually in the outpatient or emergency department setting. The AO1 message on the previous slide was really the admit the hospitalization type message. The AO8, like I said before, was the patient update. When you look in the guide, it does include a description of all the for each one of the message segments within those messages. It does list out all the fields that are included in there. There's a message header segment. These are all the message segments that are included in all those messages. The message header, the event type, the patient allergy information segment, patient visit segment, the patient identification segment, and the observation segment, and the diagnosis segment. This work, if you look at the, I think it's towards the end of the document, the very last one, really lists the core data elements, and these are the actual data elements that are going to get coded in those messages. There's a total of 32. Of those 32, 7 of them are required elements in message, so they'll be in every message. They're expected in every message. There's also 16 that are required but can be empty, and some of those might be that was data that wasn't captured, but the intent is that the system should still support those and be capable of sending those data elements. And also there's 9 optional data elements. And I did happen to be in a meeting yesterday where they discussed whether the optional description down here was accurate, so that may change a little bit because it says that the optional data elements that the system still must support those. There was a little bit of pushback yesterday, so I don't know if that will that feedback will change any of this document because it really doesn't align with HL7 usage of optionality. So But if you look in the book or in the message guide, all of these data elements, the whole 32, will be described in there. It'll also tell you the data element name, a description of that. It'll provide the usage. As I said, it'll be required but empty or optional. It'll give you the cardinality, how many times that field can appear or that data element can appear. And in the notes, it'll tell you information about coding those data elements, where they get coded in the messages, value sets that might be used or recommended for coding those elements. This is a list of those data elements, and if you look, they're grouped here. There's six around the facility information to really decide to identify the facility that's involved, four for the actual visit information, the patient information demographic is another group, and then all the public health indicators are really in the last group of data elements. As I said, the guide includes, for each of the fields that we talk about in the message segment, the guide will get down there and it will specify the sequence, it'll specify the data type that can be used in that field, it'll specify the length, the usage, the cardinality, and as I said, it'll do the value sets and accepted values. The next steps for this work is really to finalize the guide, and what Dr. Lipsky had said the other day, he thought that guide would be out sometime around the middle of September in the final version. And they're also looking at the use case for message guide on sharing syndromic surveillance with federal partners, and they're also looking at perhaps there's a need for another guide that addresses the other potential data sources and data elements for syndromic surveillance. So whether that will be incorporated in a separate guide, those decisions haven't been made. And that's it.